School closures, layoffs, sickness, and lockdowns. We're facing unprecedented restrictions and hardships, uncertainty and frustration. As it is so often the case in times of crisis, the stories of everyday folks doing extraordinary things to help their communities aren't rare. It is inspiring so many people are coming forward to help, and that's how we're going to beat this back. How well we succeed will be measured by how well we handle the adversity. Today is April the 29th, 2020. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm, on the Internet, and pcradioshow.org. To listen to the live program on the telephone each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the number is 641-793-7091. You can leave us a message with your question or comments at hank@pcradioshow.org. Windows 10 users have been dealt yet another download blow. With a new Microsoft update capable of deleting user files and bricking your PC. Windows 10 fans need to be on alert about a recently released update which can cause user files to suddenly get deleted as well as bricking PCs. Windows 10 is the world's most used operating system, with the latest stats giving the Microsoft software a 51.57% share of the marketplace. However, while Windows 10 is the most popular desktop OS in the world, users are no strangers to receiving warnings about downloads from Microsoft. Just recently, Windows 10 users reported that a new update ended up having the knock-on effect of breaking the inbuilt Windows Defender malware protection. And now, there has been reports of issues with another Windows 10 update. This time, KB4549951 patch. Let me repeat that. KB4549951 patch that was released on April the 14th. That's very recent. This release Windows 10 download was meant to introduce a number of security fixes to the Microsoft operating system. But users have since reported some serious issues with the patch, namely files being deleted or moved around, as well as the blue screen of death appearing. Microsoft claimed they will protect customers from cyber attacks. Well, Microsoft is doing a good job of attacking you first. Until Microsoft issues a fix or advisory, then the best course of action is to uninstall this April 2020 cumulative update. However, be forewarned that if you do this, it means you won't have the latest security fixes. Which is more important, the security fix or making sure that your operating system is running well? The news comes as Microsoft fans are gearing up for the next big Windows 10 update, which is set to be May 2020. The Windows 10 May 2020 update includes changes to Task Manager and Cortana, as well as bringing changes to how updates are downloads and the way logins work. Hey, wait a minute. Didn't I just have this problem? Cyber attack steals PC data through fan vibrations. If that's true, it's an amazing story. Researchers prove they can seep data off your PC through fan vibrations. As more and more security vulnerabilities get patched up, researchers are turning to rather unique methods of siphoning data from PCs. The latest technique comes from Mordechai Guri at the Ben-Gurion University in Israel. The researcher found that it is possible to use a mobile phone to measure your PC's fan vibrations. Yes, you heard right. The program is called AirFiber, V-I-B-E-R. The core concept of Guri's work consists of overcoming the air gap between a phone and a PC using a non-internet or cable-based connection. He has found that the accelerometers in some mobile phones are incredibly accurate and can sense even the smallest of changes in movement coming through your PC's fan vibrations. Using this knowledge, the researcher wrote pair of programs, one that installs on the PC as malware and another that can run on your phone. The PC-based malware can then send signals to the PC's case fans, which in turn gets transferred into your desk and picked up by the phone for interpretation. CPU coolers were less effective due to the added damping from the motherboard. The more imbalance there was in the fans, the easier it was to transmit the data. But before you go off investing in Nokia fans known for being well-balanced, keep in mind that this method of cyber attack is painstakingly inefficient and in all likeliness won't be used by anyone in a real-life scenario. The data rate was slow. We're talking about single words being transferred. Unless the attackers are extremely desperate and have no other viable ways of accessing your data, we shouldn't be worrying too much about this type of attack. The data rate isn't the only factor holding back the success of this attack method. An attacker would still need to get the malware installed on the PC to be able to send the signals. They also need access to your mobile phone to read out the accelerometer. However, this is achievable without any permissions, as many mobile phones give free access to the accelerometer data through the browser. In the past, there have been other methods of wireless transferring data from a PC to an external device. Using the hard disk drive activity, LED to transmit sound through internal speakers and reading out keyboard use through electromagnetic signals are just a few examples. Previously, Guru's team also found a way to siphon data from air gap system using a screen brightness technique. However, all these methods are largely for research, so I wouldn't worry about that at this time. There's no need to keep your phone off your desk on a vibration damping pad. But one day, with more advances in technology, we should be worried. Apple iPhone at risk of hacking through email app. A flaw in Apple's mobile operating system may have left millions of iPhone and iPad users vulnerable to hackers. Research published by ZecOps, that's ZecOps, a mobile security firm, said a bug in the mail app made devices susceptible to sophisticated attacks. The firm said it had high confidence the bug has been used to exploit at least 6 high-profile victims. An Apple spokesperson told Reuters a fix would be included in upcoming software updates. ZecOps reported the bug to Apple in March. The tech giant had not previously known about the issue. To exploit this flaw, hackers would send a seemingly blank message to an iPhone or iPad user mail account, the email on iOS devices. When the email was opened, it would crash the app, forcing the user to reboot. During the reboot, hackers would be able to access information on the device. What makes this attack different from other hacks is users do not need to download any external software or visit a website that contains malicious software. Typically, hacks require some action on the part of the victim. Those steps make possible to trace the origin of the attack. The researcher said the bug could be exploited even on recent versions of iOS. ZecOps claims that it had found evidence that the bug was used to attack well-known targets, including individuals from a Fortune 500 company in North America, an executive from a mobile carrier in Japan, and employees of technology companies in Saudi Arabia and Israel, a European journalist, and an individual in Germany. The firm would not disclose the identities of the victims. Apple products are typically considered to be more secure than other mobile devices. Experts says this shows how difficult it can be to spot underlying vulnerabilities. With the coronavirus pandemic, What has happened to the consumer electronic industry? The Consumer Technology Association released a report finding consumer decline in purchase of smartphones, TVs, and laptops. Spending on streaming services such as Netflix and Amazon Prime will rise amid stay-at-home orders, performing better than expected. The Consumer Technology Association said unemployment and downward pressure on consumer spending caused by this pandemic will bring significant headwinds to the tech industry outlook this year. The tech industry has weathered many economic storms over the last few decades, but as a whole, the tech sector remains resilient and plays an indispensable role in our lives. Technology will be a catalyst for America's comeback from this crisis. The Consumer Technology Association report examines unit shipments for core device categories only and include upper and lower bound scenarios for each category. The Consumer Technology Association, I'll call it CTA, analysis also notes innovation in emerging technologies and can provide tailwinds to the outlook. CTA factors four major considerations into the updated 2020 projections, including longevity of the health crisis, economic hardship facing downward pressure on spending, effects of the fiscal stimulus, and shifts in consumer behavior. The updated outlook for core device categories expects consumers will delay big-ticket purchases such as smartphones, and the timeline to upgrade them will be lengthened. Manufacturers may delay 5G, enable releases, and other flagship models until consumer confidence returns. CTA now projects smartphones will sell between 138 to 153 million units in 2020, a 6 to 15% drop from the previous year, 2019. Despite excitement for 8K, Ultra, and HD, and OLED technologies, CTA projects between 34 to 37 million units will sell in 2020, a drop of 8 to 14% decline year over year. Near-term opportunities for TV sales include households looking to add screens to accommodate more in-home video demand and upgrades in the commercial market as businesses enhance video conferencing capabilities. Consumer demand for laptops jumped at the start of the outbreak as the workforce and students prepared to work and learn remotely. While laptops remain the dominant computing device, the drag of a recession will nonetheless pull down overall sales. CTA projects between 46 to 51 million units will sell in 2020, which represents a 4 to 12% drop decline from the prior year. A bright spot in 2020 has been service spending from video streaming services. Recent CTA research shows about half of U.S. households are now watching live TV and online streaming video more often now than they typically do in the past. As such, CTA has upwardly revised projections and expects video streaming services spending will reach between $24 to $25 billion in revenue, which is an increase between 29 to 35% over last year's levels. According to CTA, the financial health of the consumer and their willingness to spend presents the biggest swing factor to the tech industry outlook. While downside risks are in the majority right now, there are bright spots and sales of some tech devices and services may perform better than expected. You have to understand that this is not like a restaurant business where if you did not serve a customer in the past, that is a lost sale. In the case of consumer electronics, what they don't buy yesterday, they'll buy tomorrow. So actually, the consumer electronic business will catch up once the pandemic crisis is over. The CTA is the most comprehensive source of sales data, forecasts, and consumer research and trends for the consumer technology industry. One of the features of the Personal Computer Show has been interviewing people in the technical news. One problem has been the inability to schedule people to be available on Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time during a live broadcast. The alternative to that had been to schedule an interview at 3 p.m. during the weekday when studio time was available. The recorded interview would then be integrated into the broadcast. With the logistics of time zone differences, it was restrictive and difficult to coordinate. A few years ago, I found I was able to record an interview at almost any time by using the Android phone as an automatic call recorder. The audio quality was, well, not quite studio standard, but I was able to clean up the soundtrack with Audacity. The calls then were acceptable. That stopped when Android 9 was released. Automatic call recording was no longer available on an Android phone. Well, what's Plan B? I was planning to use Plan B at the start of spring of this year, which is to go back to the old-fashioned way of recording in the studio. If the time schedule didn't work out, well, it is what it is and or isn't. I had people lined up to be called from the studio. The coronavirus quickly put an end to that. Part of that lineup of people was my colleague Joe King. Due to the medical reasons, he had difficulty with his voice and you had not heard from him in almost a year. I'm happy to report his voice is almost fully recovered. You'll soon be hearing from him. What was part of the recovery process? It was a change in venue. He has relocated and now residing in Arizona, where the humidity is low and the air is not polluted like Midtown Manhattan. Call recording is a bit of a thorny issue when it comes to privacy. There are also different rules in different places, making it hard for Google to implement a standard in Android without falling foul of the law in certain jurisdictions. Android's official call recording API was removed in Android 6.0 Marshmallow, so third-party app developers have had to be creative since then, and as of Android 9 Pie, it looks like Google has put a stop to it altogether. As reported by the developer of two well-known call recording apps, they said it would no longer be possible without root in the latest version of the Android. The maker of Call Recorder, ACR, posted a detailed forum entry informing users of the bad news, stating that no third-party apps will be able to offer the functionality. Call Recorder developer Bold Beast echoed this, adding that root is the only way to go. To meet the requirements of Vodafone in Germany, where two-party consent is required for call recording, Google was said to be working on a special tone that would play every 15 seconds, thus informing the recipient. It was also rumored that Android Pie would include native call recording, but neither has come to fruition. Perhaps native recording is something we'll get in 9.1 or the release of Pixel 3. In the meantime, you might have to resort to old-fashioned method of involving the loudspeaker function and a recording app. But I got some new information. Google is working on call recording. Android's upcoming call recording feature could be region restricted. Earlier this year, it was revealed that Google is working on adding a call recording feature to its phone app. Last week, XDA developers reported that it may have already been introduced onto some Nokia phones in India. Now the arrival of this feature appears to be even more likely, as Google itself posted a support document on how to use the phone app to record a call. The document has since been taken down. According to the Google support page, in order to record a call, the device must run Android 9 or later, and it has to have the latest version of the phone app on a supported device and country or region. However, it did not specify what those devices, countries, or regions were. Recording a call is apparently as simple as opening the phone app, making or receiving the call, and hitting the record button on the screen. The document went on to say that when you record a call for the first time, you'll be advised that you're responsible for complying with local laws. Many regions require consent by all parties prior to call recording. It states, when you start recording, the other party hears a disclosure informing them that the call is being recorded. When you stop recording, The other party hears a disclosure informing them that the call recording has ended. Additionally, the document said that you can't record until the other party has picked up. If the call is on hold or mute, or if you started a conference call. Recorded calls are stored on the device and not in the cloud. You can access them via the phone app. Simply tap Recents, and then the name of the caller, and from there you can play back the recording, delete it, or share the call via email or messaging apps. There's no word yet on just when we'll see this feature arrive on Android, but with a few customers in India already seeing it, and Google publishing, and then, of course, taking it down, its own official support document for it, I'm guessing it could be pretty soon, and I am looking forward to it. Presenting Benjamin Rockwell with his IT Pro series, Moving the World to Working Remote Overnight, and What We Had to Learn.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time for business. This is where I give you my 30 years of experience of being an IT professional. And look, right now we are in the midst of something we haven't had to do before. We have, as information technology professionals, over the course of the last couple of months, we have moved the entire world. Well, okay, not the entire world. We've moved much of the working world, the working world that's staying alive, into remote, into working from home. And this did not come without a boatload of issues, a boatload of problems. And yes, there were so many different issues that were just presented all at once. The first of all, there were many issues in regards to that instant transition. Normally, IT likes to test things. We like to be prepared. We are digital Boy Scouts frequently. Not all of us. There's a number of digital cowboys. And, you know, we do a lot of battle between each other. So there are many that are prepared, and there are many that'll just go on out off into the wilderness. And yeah, you get the idea. It's just Wild West. So how do we handle all of this? Well, we like to test things. And in many cases, we were not able to test. We dove into what was a nightmare. We have to roll out the ability for 100, 500, 1,000 employees to work from home. Yes, in the past, we've had these 10, 15, 20 technicians that used to work via remote. I will tell you, nothing is more annoying than having to reboot a server at 2 o'clock in the morning when you don't have remote support. So, you know, even when I was the sole IT guy, I did that for a number of years. I was the sole IT guy for an aerospace subcontractor. One of the things that I set up was the ability for me to access all of the different systems via remote. I was in the middle of the night. I was a 45-minute drive-in, 30-minute drive-in, depending on, you know, how much I wanted to risk getting a ticket. But you get the idea. So, you know, there was that availability for me. Nobody else worked via remote at the company. The boss had a laptop. He could get his email anywhere he was. That was it for remote work. Now, the company I work for right now, we sent many, many employees off home, many of which had never done this before, let alone everybody doing it on the same day. You know, this was something that was reserved for higher echelon people, the VIPs. So we're presented with this idea of bandwidth as well. So we haven't tested the ability for thousands of people to hit something that was only done by 20, 30, 40, 50 people, maybe 100 people at once. Now we've got thousands. We also have all of that bandwidth. We don't know how much bandwidth we need because we're growing just dramatically. And people are doing things that they've never done before via remote. We weren't thinking ahead before. You know, we're working via remote. We've got enough bandwidth. Okay, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be doing YouTube via remote. You know, because it goes through the company servers, the company network, and then goes out to YouTube, brings it all back, and there's a bandwidth issue there. But it's a marginal bandwidth. Now you have 100 people doing that, that really tends to kill the network connection. And then also, we've had to deal with the different problems with adapting from working in an office with distractions, with all the people there. Now we've got a whole new set of distractions. We've got a home full of distractions. The kids coming through the door, and you have to take care of them. You have to figure out, okay, what am I going to make for lunch? Because I'm not going to be able to go on out to the local burger joint or whatever. I can't go down to the cafeteria, whatever it is that you did before. So now there's a whole new world of distractions, which you and I are all having to deal with. This isn't just an IT thing. This is a business thing. And the same idea of, that's extended from that, the daycare, the homeschooling while we're working. We also have our own issues. And our own issues, I'm going to cover a lot of this in next week's segment, but I'm going to hit on probably the biggest one that is something that we suffer from, and our bosses, suffer from this, and we have to tolerate on the business side, and we have to ask them to give us some leeway, some grace, the people who are our bosses, because we do have a life outside of the, you know, the standard 8-hour day. And that life is at home. That life is going to encroach in as we start to really blur the difference between the office and home. There's so many different issues, and I'm only scratching the surface on this. This is something that has been a support issue, it's been a boss issue, it's been an employee issue for the last month, and it is getting better. All the way across, to the people who are working from home, to the bosses, to the VIPs, and to IT, we're starting to sort this out. We're starting to figure this out, and it will be just fine. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. John Conway. John Conway, the John von Neumann Professor Emeritus of Applied and Computational Mathematics and Professor Emeritus of Mathematics at Princeton University, famed for his invention of the game of life, have died from COVID-19 complications on April the 11th. He was 82. In 1970, John Conway invented the game of life, which is played on two-dimensional plane with live and dead square cells, and a series of deterministic rules. It was first published in the October 1970 issue of Scientific American. I remember well that article, and I read it with great interest. He performed early experiments of the game on a Go board in an era long before personal computers, and discovered behaviors that led to vast insights in statistics, economics, biology, cognitive science, and cellular automation. The game of life grew an almost cult-like following. 50 years after its release, it continues to enjoy an active community of players who are both professional and amateur mathematicians. One of Conway's most well-known accomplishments was the game of life, which he conceived in the 1970s to describe how life can evolve from an initial state. The concept builds on ideas that trace back to John von Neumann, a pioneer of early computing, in the 1940s. Conway's game involves a two-dimensional grid in which each square cell interacts with its neighbors according to a set of rules. Over time, these simple interactions gave rise to complexity. The game was introduced in October of 1970 issue of Scientific Mathematic Columns column. I remember that quite well because I started using graph paper and put different kinds of graphs and symbols on it, and I use his rules. It's a very interesting game. The game of life is not your typical computer game. It is a cellular automaton, and it was invented by Cambridge mathematician John Conway. This game became widely known when it was mentioned in an article published by Scientific American in 1970, and it consists of a collection of cells which, based on a few, and only really a few, mathematical rules, can live, die, or multiply, depending on the initial conditions. The cells form various patterns throughout the course of the game. The rules are very simple. For a space that's populated, each cell with one or no neighbor dies as if by solitude. Each cell with four or more neighbor dies as if by overpopulation. Each cell with two or three neighbors survives. For a space that's empty or unpopulated, each cell with three neighbors becomes populated. Those were the simple rules. So I could draw a figure on a graph sheet of paper, and I would go through those rules, and I come up with a new grid. And when you go through many iterations of it, you could see the population of cells grow, die, and makes for very interesting patterns. Well, you can do that on a computer on your screen now. Try it. You may have fun with it. John Conway, may he rest in peace. Buying a new computer? There is a basic rule that we advocate when buying a new computer. Buy what you need today and don't invest too much money in a system configuration for the future. Tomorrow, you'll be able to buy more computing power and features for less money. Another rule is that if you have a business need, or for that matter, an academic need for a computer, don't wait for a sale. I personally have been buying computers with basic memory and storage. I then upgrade memory and swap out the hard disk drive for greater capacity at a lower cost. I don't recommend this for those who are not comfortable in upgrading hardware. Many low-cost systems are sold with memory soldered onto the motherboard, preventing you from upgrading memory. These low-cost systems also typically use M.2 or eMMC storage memory soldered onto the motherboard. The Microsoft Surface notebook systems are very well made. Fit and finish is just top-notch. Your units are lightweight and thin. They are expensive. A major personal negative I have on the Surface is memory's not upgradable. The units with flash memory storage are not removable for upgrade. Now Microsoft reveals why no Surface device has Thunderbolt and why you can't upgrade your RAM. Microsoft came very late to the party when it came to adding USB-C to their range of Surface laptops and PCs, and when it did eventually arrive, Microsoft disappointed many due to the ports not supporting Thunderbolt, which offers much faster data speeds and which is overall more versatile. Now the reason for this somewhat strange choice has been revealed in a Microsoft presentation, which explains that it is all about security. That's important. Thunderbolt uses DMA, or direct memory access, which means the port can read and write directly to your device's RAM without the operating system or processor being involved. This offers great speed, but also means a malicious device could read any part of your RAM at will, including important items such as your BitLocker key and other encryption keys, or even inject malware which allows hackers to bypass the lock screen. It is for the same reason, according to Microsoft, that all Surface products have soldered RAM, as attackers could use liquid nitrogen to preserve the state of a RAM chip without power, move the chip to an external RAM reader, and then get full unprotected access to your RAM, including encryption keys. While it is obvious that these attack vectors are real, it's less obvious that the bulk of people need to worry about them and be limited by security concern, which affects very few people. If an attacker has physical access to your PC, it seems likely there are several other more obvious software attacks which would offer full access before breaking out the bottle of liquid nitrogen. This level of security may be more relevant to special computers offered to governments than someone doing a spreadsheet at home. Interestingly, Microsoft did introduce Kernel DMA protection to protect PCs against drive-by DMA access attacks using PCI hot plug devices connected to Thunderbolt 3 ports with Windows 10 build 1803, meaning Microsoft will hopefully someday release a Surface with Thunderbolt 3. I guess my mind has changed now, and if it's a case of security and privacy, well, this addresses security, and privacy is a separate issue I have to deal with big tech such as Facebook, Google, Amazon, and now Zoom. If you are single and living alone, the stay-at-home order can be devastating. There's just so much television shows and downloaded films that you can watch before the feeling of loneliness starts settling in and affects your psyche. Can you imagine spending significant time working at home where the only human interaction is virtual reality? Some of the people I have been contacting say that when the pandemic crisis ends, not all IT work will return to normalcy. Many companies have plans to shift the IT workload where it is practical to be from the home. This will have a long-term impact on how we work. That in turn will affect local businesses such as restaurants and local retail shops supporting a workforce housed in brick and mortar. It appears that for some to fill the void, they have adopted a pet. Guess what? Aside from toilet paper shortage, the newest shortage in New York City is running out of dogs to adopt or foster. Of all the shortages created by the coronavirus pandemic, the toilet paper, the hand sanitizer, and the bottled water, the oddest of them all has to be dogs, oh, and cats too. In the New York City area, the epicenter of the disease, there is suddenly a run on pets, at least of the adopted or foster kind. Muddy Paws Rescue and Best Friends Animal Society are reporting shelters that they work with are either all out of or almost out of cats and dogs after a surge in applications of as much as tenfold in the past couple of weeks. New Yorkers apparently see the four-legged animals as a way to calm frayed nerves. For the moment, shelters don't have any dogs left to match with foster volunteers, which from the perspective of animal lovers is a great problem to have. The run on pets seems to extend beyond New York, at least in disease hotspots. The American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals said that in Los Angeles, they saw a 70% increase in animals going into foster care. And Best Friends said many of the shelters it partners with across the United States report the same phenomenon. They're seeing people show up in droves to foster. While the pickings are slim now, rescue organizations worry they'll soon see the opposite problem, a rise in surrendered pets as many Americans lose their jobs. Shelters may be asked to take in more animals than they have room to house. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that's the CDC, along with the enjoyment that they provide, pets offer a variety of health benefits, including decreased blood pressure, lowered cholesterol levels, decreased levels of triglyceride, a type of fat in your body, reduced feelings of loneliness, increased opportunities for exercise and outdoor activities, and improved opportunities for social connection. CDC opines that there's no question that having a pet in your home during the best of times can bring joy. In more trying times, pets can offer more than just a slobbery greeting or good-natured nuzzle. When faced with the challenge of job loss, health concerns, and social isolation, pet owners are turning to their animal friends for far more than basic companionship and improved vitals. Many people are finding that their pets are helping to reduce anxiety and depression and give them hope. CDC offers 5 ways you can turn to your pets, whatever the species, to help you during the COVID-19 pandemic. Talk to the pet. It could be a hamster, it could be a hermit crab, or even could be aquarium fish. Many pets are able to pick up on your emotions and can sense stress or sadness. They are great listeners, and no unwelcome advice is given. And sometimes just saying things aloud can offer relief or help you work through your troubling thoughts. Look to them for comedy relief. Pets are funny, often without any effort at all. Whether chasing their tail or each other if there are two or more in your home, hiding their toys, falling off their exercise wheel, or swimming in circles. Pets are often good for at least a chuckle, and laughter is an excellent way to relieve stress. Take your pet out for a walk, whether on a leash, in a stroller, or on your shoulder, and some pets are more than happy to accompany you on a walk, which is currently an excellent way to get much-needed exercise. Breathe some fresh air and greet your neighbor from afar. Settle for a snuggle. While we may not be able to touch other humans outside our homes during social isolation, our pets are safe for a cuddle if you're healthy. Hugging your pet feels great, reduces depression, and releases feel-good hormones. It can also help you relax, ease tension, and even relieve physical pain. While enjoying extra time with your pets due to recent stay-at-home orders, it is important to continue to practice good hygiene. As always, wash your hands with soap and water for 20 seconds or use a hand sanitizer with at least 60% of alcohol before and after handling or touching your pet. So if you've been working at home with IT work and your employer decides to continue with that mode of operation and you're living alone, a pet will help ease the isolation. Marty says that if you think ignorance is bliss, think again. Right now, it's scaring the daylights out of a lot of people. Of course, if you think there's nothing to fear but fear itself, think again. There's solid ground in the middle, and once you can get your mind to focus on what's real, hey, Marty, let's get to the point.
Hey, if you think this weather pattern is normal, think again. We're all having some wild swings this year, and it's going to have some impact on your home and your yard and the places you work once we're all back to work. Recovery from the COVID-19 isolation protocols. Well, we're talking weeks to months, and if you think you know how that will make things a little wacky, think again. Also, if you think we won't be going through some level of this again in the next year, year and a half, think again. But seriously, think again. Think ahead. You can think your way through things before they happen, so when they do happen, they're a lot less jarring. That's true for you, for your family, for your home, and in case you forgot what show this is, for your tech. No, this is not going to be one of those fallout shelter discussions from the 50s or 60s, not a binge into survivalist culture, not even a zombie apocalypse battle plan. Many people are getting so lost in dark what-if thoughts, in fears of not ending tomorrow being the same as never ending, in the whole uncertainty of not yet having enough facts to be absolutely certain of anything. Well, you know people like that. Sometimes you might be one, and that's not good. When they or you are dwelling on the worst case, think again. There are simply too many positive things happening for the worst case to be able to come true. And it's a lot less about what you're thinking than about how you're thinking. Let me give you a couple of examples. Dr. Isaac Asimov was the author of many accomplishments, including a fair number of stories about robots. He set up 3 laws of robotics that were hard-coded into every robot ever made, at least within the context of these stories. And each story tended to deal with some different circumstance in which somebody, the robot or one of the humans, had to resolve some conflict that made obeying one of the laws a violation of one of the other laws. And you might think, especially if you've read his stories, you might think that Asimov was really focused on understanding robots. Well, think again. Asimov and I spent a few days together. I brought him his first word processor and I trained him on how to use it, but that still left a lot of time for chatting. I knew his love for limericks, and we'd make them up as we'd go and bandy them back and forth, and I knew him to be a workaholic with a lot of self-discipline. Weeks later, he told me he wasn't sure if I was his greatest friend or his greatest enemy. The word processor, he said, made it very easy to get a lot of writing done more efficiently than with a typewriter, but it also made it way too easy to correct and rewrite, and that was slowing him down. Well, back when we were together, the moments I want to share with you came during a taxi ride. I said, Dr. Asimov, I know a lot of people think you have some conceptual love of robots that led you to write your robot stories, but I think it's something else. He turned his head toward me and asked, what do you think it is? I told him, I think that the three laws give you elements you can bring in and out of balance so that permutations and combinations of conflicts there can give you an easy way to more quickly think of what the next storyline will be. He extended his finger, poked me in the chest, grinned, and said, you get it. Asimov, of course, is nowhere near alone in this. If you've studied Shakespeare's plays, there's a common thread through those as well, something that originated with the ancient Greeks and arose later with Nietzsche. It's about the separation of the Apollonian from the Dionysiac, man the thinker versus man the doer. In his plays, Shakespeare could derive tragedy from a thinker being compelled to be a doer and not being equipped for it, as he did with King Lear, or the doer unable to become a thinker, as he did with Macbeth and Othello. Hamlet is a strange mix of flip-flops, being a thinker when he's called upon to be a doer and being a doer when he's called upon to be a thinker. In fact, Hamlet includes a memorable line that relates to this. The time is out of joint, O cursed spite, that ever I was born to set it right. And there's some of that in the way some people are responding to sheltering at home and the necessarily slow path to recovery. Don't let that be you. You can do better. Your understanding of technology shows that you have a more logical, objective, organized, and analytical way of viewing the world. Don't let cabin fever get in the way of that. There's a virus out there, not a boogeyman and not a zombie apocalypse. If you think the whole circumstance is a puzzle you can't solve, think again. Here are some things to consider. Like many creatures, Homo sapiens are hardwired to respond to the annual exit from winter as a time to roam, to hunt, to fish, to plant, and to socialize. Those urges may be part of what you're feeling. Recognize them, acknowledge them, don't surrender to them. Remember, when everything seems to want you to be outdoors and mingling, that won't happen if doing too much of that too early leads to you catching something and spending the next few weeks sick in bed. Do you think the restrictions are too harsh and that they represent some attack on your freedom and liberty? Think again. You're free to spend time out in the yard. Just keep your distance from others. Worried that the college might not reopen or might only offer online learning or there might be no way to afford it. It's a great time for the college-age crowd to investigate training and opportunities with the military, and they pay you. Speaking of worries, where do yours come from? Newscasts? Social media? You think there's nothing but bad news? Think again. Just because they're all reporting on numbers and shortages and arguments over timelines doesn't mean that's the whole picture. Hospitals are not universally overcrowded to the point of hopelessness. There's toilet paper on store shelves again. Several vaccines are under development. There's almost no part of the picture that isn't getting brighter and clearer, unless all you pay attention to is the newscasts, the social media. You think they're the whole story? Think again. And while you're at it, think about what everybody is learning from how we all adapted to sheltering at home. Businesses discovered that workers are more productive without all those pointless meetings eating up their time. They found out that being more flexible with work from home a few days a week, and for special roles, well, that lets them afford reduced office space, cutting rent and overhead costs, leaving more money available for wages and salaries and bonuses and benefits. They also discovered that there are advantages to running businesses without trade shows and conventions. They learned that technology can be a better connector than corridors. They certainly learned the benefits of paying more attention to wellness, to cleanliness, and to creating environments with an ethic that says, if you're sick, don't tough it out at work. Now, things won't jump back to normal overnight, but they are absolutely headed back to normal. And at home, families haven't spent this much time together for, oh, maybe a century. What did you learn about cooking and laundry and cleaning and helping with homework? What did you learn about the things about teachers that everyone took too much for granted? You may have learned something about yourself, too. Did you eat too much, drink too much, feel sad too much? Do you think that part of you is unforgivable? Well, think again. It's normal. The times aren't normal, but they will be again. Hey, nobody likes boot camp, and these last months have been a lot like getting sent to boot camp, but look, it's never for forever. Next time, we can finally put an end to the cliffhanger in the story about retrofitting Frankenstein. It started with a failed PC, then two motherboards that were dead on arrival, and a third that would run but was crippled by a manufacturing defect. I'll be telling the story of the fight to get that resolved next time in an episode we'll call Igor, the Switch.
Thank you, Marty. At this point in the program, we generally make public service announcements of computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. The computer clubs have random access sessions at each of these club meetings. If you have any questions or need for technical assistance, the club members are more than happy to assist. All these club meetings are open, free to the public. However, at this time, because of the coronavirus stay-at-home order, all the computer clubs have canceled their meetings. You can go to our website, pcradioshow.org. We have the computer clubs listed, and if you go to the website, you can check when they do schedule a meeting, and some of them are holding remote virtual meetings, so you may be interested in following up on them. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.FM on the Internet and PCRadioShow.org. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to Hank at PCRadioShow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups and heed the guidance of staying at home. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King, Michael Horowitz, Marty Winston, and Benjamin Rockwell, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy, and remember, keep 6 feet apart. And if it's less than 6 feet, just back up, back up, back up. And until we meet again, same time, same station next week. In a few minutes at 7 p.m., join your neighbors and shout out into the streets your thanks and support for all the first responders. The nurses, the doctors, the EMT workers, the firemen, the policemen, the workers who maintain the supply of food, and all those who have to remain on the job to maintain essential services.